Kunjabi Hari. Topi Jana Balaba Giravare Hari. Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Could we sing the prayers to the departed Vaishnavas? Are we supposed to do that?
No, they're supposed to disappear.
Oh, that's right. Yes, I'm sorry. Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahamsa Parivraja Gatara Sotera Sata Sri Shrimana Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai Samaved Bhaktivedanta Ki Jai Gaur Premananda. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. All glories to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj Thakur Ki Jai. Okay. Hare Krishna. So, today is the very auspicious appearance day of His Divine Grace, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj, and of course the beloved spiritual master of our spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada. Of course, they're both known as Srila Prabhupada. So it's a very, very auspicious day, and of course it was a day that was so important to Srila Prabhupada, and he gave some very nice speeches about the appearance day that are recorded. But I was going to start out, since we usually do a verse every day, I was going to read, I don't know, verse 1, or was this called Invocation to Brahma Samhita, and of course the purport by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchidananda Vigraha Nadiradir Govinda Sarva Karana Karanam. Krishna, who is known as Govinda, is the Supreme Godhead. He has an eternal, blissful, spiritual body. He is the origin of all. He has no other origin, and he is the prime cause of all causes. So this is a purport of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. And it gives us a little flavor. Not only is it a wonderful purport, but it gives us a little flavor of his language and his philosophical depth and obviously his erudition. Sometimes he's actually a little difficult to understand or to follow. I shouldn't say difficult to understand. It's difficult for us, who, if you're not very learned in philosophy, and to just even to follow his language and his vocabulary. I was looking at some of his things that, you know, actually, they start making more and more sense to me, I guess, as I, you know, kind of hear Bhaktisiddhanta and sort of try to really, like, sometimes you have to have a dictionary, you know, to look up some words. But what you find is that he actually uses all of his language is totally philosophically correct in English. Well, of course it is. It's naturally philosophically correct, but even the English language usage of philosophical terms he uses really right spot on. So anyway, he was just an incredible scholar, as we all know. So I'll read the purport. Krishna is the exalted supreme entity, having his eternal name, eternal form, eternal attribution, and eternal pastimes. The very name Krishna implies his love-attracting designation, expressing by his eternal nomenclature the acme of entity. His eternal, beautiful, heavenly, blue-tinged body, glowing with the intensity of ever-existing knowledge, has a flute in both hands. As his inconceivable spiritual energy is all-extending, still he maintains his all-charming, medium size by his qualifying spiritual instrumentals. His all-accommodating supreme subjectivity is nicely manifested in his eternal form. The concentrated all-time presence, uncovered knowledge, and inebriating felicity have their beauty in him. The mundane manifestation portion of his own self is known as the all-pervading Paramatma, Ishvara, Superior Lord, or Vishnu, all-fostering. Hence it is evident that Krishna is the sole supreme personality of Godhead. He actually didn't say personality of Godhead, sole supreme Godhead. His unrivaled or unique spiritual body of super excellent charm is eternally unveiled with innumerable spiritual instrumentals, senses, and unreckonable attributes, keeping their signifying location properly, adjusting at the same time by his inconceivable conciliative powers. This beautiful spiritual figure is identical with Krishna, and the spiritual entity of Krishna is identical with his own figure. In other words, Krishna's form are non-different, I think is what he's saying. The very intensely blended entity of eternal presence of felicitous cognition. Felicitous means what? Pleasant? Very. Something like that. Yeah, basically pleasant, you know. Or it can be, not auspicious exactly. Anyway. Felicitous cognition is the charming, targeted holding of transcendental icon. It follows that the conception of the indistinguishable, formless magnitude, Brahman, which is an indolent, lax presentment of cognitive bliss. Interesting. Brahman is indolent and lax because there's no service, right? Because you don't do anything in Brahman, so it's, I guess that's what he means. It's indolent. Is merely a penumbra. Penumbra is like a shadow, right? Merely a penumbra of intensely blended glow of the three concomitants, these, the blissful, the substantive, and the cognitive. This transcendental manifestive icon, Krishna, in his original face, is primordial background of magnitudinal infinite Brahman and of the all-pervasive oversoul. Krishna is truly vision in his variegated pastimes, such as owner of transcendental cows, chief of cowherds, consort of milkmaids, ruler of the terrestrial abode Gokula, an object of worship by the transcendental residents of Goloka beauties, is Govinda. He is the root cause of all causes, who are the predominating and predominated agents of the universe. The glance of his projected fractional portion in the sacred originating water, the personal oversoul or Paramatma, gives rise to a secondary potency nature who creates this mundane universe. This oversoul's intermediate energy brings forth the individual souls analogously to the emanated rays of the sun. This book is a treatise of Krishna, so the preamble is enacted by chanting his name in the beginning. And then the fifth chapter of the Brahma Samhita commences at that point. And I'm not even going to attempt any comment on this wonderful verse and purport by his divine grace. So, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj, incredibly important figure in Vaishnava history, incredible accomplishments, and incredible personal meaning to us because of his, obviously, importance in our Sampradaya and to Srila Prabhupada or Gurudev. Of course, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta also followed in the footsteps of his illustrious father, Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And Bhaktivinoda was very instrumental, as we know, in reviving Vaishnavism in Bengal and throughout India. Vaishnavism was in pretty bad shape. You know, I mean, you don't really see a lot of very prominent acharyas in the line. It kind of goes Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, then Baladev Vijayabhushana, and then it kind of jumps, doesn't it, down to Jagannath Das Babaji. In other words, there's like quite a gap in there. So Vaishnavism was in really not a good, strong condition. Sahajism was prominent. A lot of people that thought very lowly of Vaishnavism because of the Sahajiyas. Impersonalism was very strong. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur set out to defeat this. And he worked tirelessly to defeat caste Brahmanism, Sahajiyism, impersonalism, voidism, just as Bhaktisiddhanta did and Srila Prabhupada did. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur continued the work of his father, not only continued, but increased, even spread Krishna consciousness further based upon the strong roots of Bhaktivinoda. Just as Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote extensively, printed, wrote in English and in Bengali, thus so did Bhaktisiddhanta. He wrote extensively. He spread Krishna consciousness to 64 temples, mostly in India, many of them right in the Bengal area, West Bengal area, I think the 13 or that. But he also, even some of them were in like Burma. He had a temple, I think, and a couple places. And of course, he also sent some of his disciples to the West, who briefly had, you know, some preaching activity in London, and I think in Germany. So, you know, he was a visionary, and he had the vision of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu of spreading Krishna consciousness throughout the world. His writing and printing was remarkable, and he really began that tradition that Srila Prabhupada continued of not only writing, as the Goswamis and other, well, they did too, but printing and distributing the books and literature, having them widely dispersed as much as possible, you know, really trying to bring Krishna consciousness to everyone. And thus, and of course, by going to the Western world, this was very revolutionary to do that. And because before that, no one had actually gone out of India, I don't believe, any of the previous acharyas. And does anyone know of any? I don't know of any before Bhaktisiddhanta. There were a couple of Mayavadis who came to the West, like Vivekananda, but around 1900. But anyway, incredibly important, instrumental figure in spreading Krishna consciousness throughout the world in our very, very close history. So just a couple things about the life of Bhaktisiddhanta. He was born February 6th, according to our calendar, 1874. So today is, you know, it varies because of the lunar count, you know. He was the fourth son of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who had many children, 10? Was it? 10, okay. And he came from a very prestigious family. Obviously, Bhaktivinoda came from a very prestigious family. He was obviously in a Vaishnava line, and even his family line, I mean, of course, he was in a spiritual line dating back all the way Brahma, Madhva, Lord Chaitanya, you know, up through, you know, Jagannath Das Babaji, his father, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, etc. So, you know, very, very prestigious and wonderful direct connection with Krishna and Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but also his own family connection. He was in the line, in the family line from Narottam Das Thakur. And he was, I think, 12th generation from Narottam. And now Narottam was Brahmacharya Sannyas, right? He didn't have children? No children, but so he was reeling the line from Narottam's father. And in other words, it must have been, so Narottam would be his great, 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 great uncle, you know, not a grandfather, you know, so because he didn't have children, but obviously probably came through a brother or sister of Narottam, because that family line came through Raja Krishnandana, who was the king, and he was a great devotee. In fact, he was an associate of Lord Nityananda, very favored by Lord Nityananda, so Narottam's family were pure Vaishnavas as well. So that's the line, the family line that Bhaktisiddhanta came from. I'll read something. Most of the things when I'm reading things about his life or pastimes are taken from Rupa Vilas's book of Raya Vishnu, which I know there's a couple newer books, but I just want to have. And I just always like it. It's a nice book. February 6th, 1874 AD, by the Western calendar, at 3:30 in the afternoon, Bimal Prasad Dutta, later to be known as Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, made his appearance in Purushottama Chaitra Jagannath Puri in the state of Orissa, not far from the temple of Lord Jagannath. He was the fourth son of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Sri Yukta Bhagavati Dasi Devi. And at the time of his birth, all 32 bodily symptoms of a Mahapurusha, a great personality, were pointed out by an experienced astrologer. Furthermore, the boy was born with his umbilical cord wrapped around his neck like a Brahmin's thread. The astrologer commented at his birth, "I have done many horoscopes in my life, but I have never before seen such a horoscope filled with all the signs of a great personality. This child will become world famous as a brilliant teacher of life's ultimate goal." Well, that was a good astrologer because he was exactly right. This came to pass. Another famous story we've all heard is the Jagannath's garland falling during the Rath Yatra. When the child was 6 months old, Lord Jagannath's Rathyatra festival was in procession, and the cart stopped in front of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's house for 3 days. Following the instructions of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Bhagavati Devi brought the child before the cart, and an offered garland fell from the neck of the Lord, encircling the boy. This was taken as a sign of special favor by all present. The grain ceremony was observed on the cart at that time and was done with Jagannath Prasad. When the boy's vocational inclination was tested, he immediately embraced the Srimad Bhagavatam, indicating his future as a preacher. Thus, Srila Bhaktivinoda's prayer for a ray of Vishnu to help spread Krishna consciousness movement was fulfilled. Of course, Bhaktisiddhanta is great strength and determination. He was a very powerful personality, very powerful preacher, and that was manifested right from his childhood. This is another famous one, the mango incident. When he was a small boy, perhaps 2 or 3 years old, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur brought some ripe mangoes from the market. Bimal Prasad took one to eat, saying, "This is mine." Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur got up and said in a grave voice, "What is this? New fruit has come into the house. It has not been offered to Giridhari, and you have taken it first? Remember, new fruit is to be given first to the Lord. Without giving the first share to the Lord, nothing is to be taken." The child was very repentant and exclaimed, "Oh, what evil thoughts I've had." He's 2 years old. You know, right? "Throughout my whole life, I shall not eat these again. This is the right punishment for one who is ruled by greed." He made that promise and observed it throughout his whole life. His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, comments on this incident. "Whenever we offered him mango, he said, 'No, I am an offender. I cannot take mango.' He was thinking, 'I have offended Krishna in my childhood by taking the mango of the deity.' So this is the characteristic of an acharya. They teach by their life's action. One should be so much determined. A child took the mango. There is no offense, but he took the vow." So that purity and determination continued throughout his life, and we see that many times in different incidents that we'll discuss. Of course, he was a lifelong celibate brahmachari. That certainly takes great determination and strength, and so he showed and exhibited that example. Very learned. His intelligence was remarkable. He studied Sanskrit. He studied astrology. He studied mathematics. I think he even wrote books on those subjects. He wrote a book on astrology and mathematics. Sanskrit scholar, and he wrote extensively. He was serving the king of Tripura as a teacher. I think he was teaching his family. And he was offered academic appointments at universities because he was so learned. But he declined most of these. And later he renounced all of this activity in 1898 after he takes initiation from Gaur Kishore Das Babaji. So we're really talking about 74 to 98. He's 24 years old at this point. So by 24 years old, he was already totally successful in material terms. In the eyes of the world, he was a great scholar, a great personality, as a very young man. And then as a very young man, sort of in the height of your youth and your, you know, where most people are looking at their future and what am I going to accomplish and what, you know, you get all these academic positions, the king is favoring him, gives it up. He takes initiation, which is another story of his determination with Gaur Kishore Das Babaji. Bhaktivinoda Thakur told him he should take initiation from Gaur Kishore. Gaur Kishore had no disciples, and Gaur Kishore was, sometimes we heard it said he was illiterate. I don't think he was actually illiterate, but he wasn't a scholar. I mean, he, by any means. And so he actually felt himself unworthy to take on such a great personality, a scholar, you know, as his disciple. Because that's one of the marks of a true Mahatma, that he's so humble. He thought himself not worthy. I can't take this person. I mean, he probably knows more philosophy than I do. You know, that. Of course, Gaur Kishore was a great personality. He was a pure devotee. His heart was completely pure, and that was the qualification. And his father told him, "Yes, you must." And so he refused. And he goes back, tells his father, he won't accept me as a disciple. Dr. Noda said, "You go back and you must have him take you as disciple. You must become his, he must become your guru." And so finally, I mean, Bhaktisiddhanta practically threatened that, "I'll kill myself if you don't take me as your disciple." So he did. He relented. And I think that was his only disciple throughout his life. for that determination, and this is the order of my father, to take him as my spiritual master. I will do anything I need to do to accomplish this. And of course, he had the greatest love and respect for his Guru Maharaj throughout his life. Of course, Gorkhasharadas Babaji accepted Bhaktivinoda Thakur as his Shiksha Guru. He had another guru. Actually, he was initiated by Jagannath Das Babaji, I believe, wasn't he? But, you know, after he left, he took Bhaktivinoda Thakur as it was his main Shiksha. So, in 1905, a few years later, he takes his great vow. 31 years old now. He takes a vow of chanting 1 billion names of the Lord. Hey, 1 billion, you know, it seems like we chant thousands of names. What's a billion? Well, what's a billion? We'll soon see. In 1905, at the age of 31, he began his great vow, following the example of Namacharya Haridas Thakur, of chanting 3 lakhs of names, 300,000 names, which is 192 rounds per day. He determined at the rate of 300,000 names daily, it would take 9 years to complete 1 billion names. He resided in a grass hut at the Yogapith for 4 years, and in February 1909, he built a cottage near the Yogapith at Vrajapatana, town of Vraja, on the site of the house of Sri Chandrasekharacharya, the uncle of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So 9 years of chanting 192 rounds a day. I was thinking this morning, I was thinking, what would be the consciousness of someone after that incredible feat? I would think any one of us would be pretty pure if we did that, right? I mean, your heart would just be so purified, you'd be so intensely, you know, enamored with Krishna's name. The problem is, I doubt if many of us could do that. You know, could anyone do that? It's almost inconceivable. I remember once Satchinanda Swami, who's, you know, he's known for his chanting, his love for japing. He does the japa retreats and everything. And I heard, he was talking once, he said, you know, 64 rounds is really not that hard. Because at the end of the japa repeats, at the end of the japa retreat, he has everybody chant 64 rounds the last day. So most people can do it. I mean, that's all you're doing. If you're not doing other service, it's not that hard. It's only 8 hours of chanting. But, you know, he said, you know, 64 rounds is not really that hard. He said, even 108 rounds is doable. I've done that a few times. 192, that is difficult. He said, that is really tough. I mean, this is someone who is very expert at chanting. And then think about doing it every day for 9 years. To me, that's just remarkable. Okay. So, and then, of course, he observed Chaturmasya, only eating cooked rice and ghee, eating on the floor in the manner of a cow. Take a rest, lying on the ground, never use a pillow. And seeing his renunciation, his Gurudev, Srila Gorkhasharadas Babaji Maharaj said, I observe that the renunciation of Rupa Raghunath is manifest in my Prabhu. He used to always address his disciples, my Prabhu. That's his humility. He's calling his disciple my master. Anyway, so after that, after this intense vrata, he began very, very vigorous preaching with incredible strength and determination. He's establishing temples. He's making many, many disciples. He establishes 64 temples, as we mentioned. And this goes on until all the way up to when he leaves his body in 1936 or 37. I've seen it saying 36 and I've seen it saying 37. Apparently it was January 1st. So it might have been 36, you know, it just depends on a couple hours there. It's right on the, between 30s. But anyway, I think it's January 1st, 37 is the usual day. But anyway, his preaching was so strong in defeating caste Brahmanism, against Mayavadi philosophy. In fact, it's described that Mayavadi sannyasis, they saw him, they crossed the street to avoid him because nobody wanted to take him on because he was strong preaching. I mean, he wouldn't talk philosophy. Then he would say, "Why are you misleading people by this bogus philosophy?" I mean, he would go right at him. So he was known, of course, as the Sringa Guru, the Lion Guru. You know, not that he wasn't a kind and very loving person. He was, but not with Mayavadis. They saw the lion side. I mean, people who were, because the Mayavadis are, you know. For the devotees, it's like they're denying God, denying Krishna. So it's painful. It's painful to hear that philosophy for a devotee. you know? It's kind of like saying, oh, you don't really have a father. You don't have a mother. What do you mean? You know, it's like, it's more than that. So anyway, he would preach very, very strongly. And he also preached against caste Brahmanism, which was very strong in India at that time. Of course, it's still there to some degree, but I mean, it was much stronger, I think, even then. And and of course, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu preached against this. He famously had Haridas Thakur, was a Muslim, was, you know, his Namacharya, his closest disciple. Rupa and Sanatan probably were considered outside of Hindu society because they took employment from the Muslim ruler. So that made no difference to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and it made no difference to our acharyas online, who really understand clearly that we are the spirit soul, not the body. And anyone who takes to Vaishnavism, who takes to Krishna consciousness, is a great personality. And it's superior to anyone, no matter what your birth is, no matter what your caste is. These things are insignificant. So, of course, there's the famous story of defeating the Brahmins. This was a speech in 1911. There was a big convocation, and the topic of this big seminar, whatever, all these great big leaders and scholars coming together, and they were going to talk about Brahman, about what is a Brahmin, what is a Vaishnava. These were the topics. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, at that time, 1911, was kind of near the end of his life, and he wasn't well enough, and he sent his son. He sent Bhaktisiddhanta. Well, I will read this. When Bhaktisiddhanta first was asked to speak, initially he began to recite the glories of the Brahmins. The opposing pandits were beside themselves with joy. They had no idea there were so many verses glorifying Brahmins, and they eagerly heard Siddhanta Saraswati speak. However, Siddhanta Saraswati then began to explain and define the Brahmin, the Vaishnav, and the relationship between the two, the qualification of a guru, etc. And then the opposition's joy quickly subsided. No one could offer a strong argument response. A huge uproar commenced. Some counter-arguments were given, but Siddhanta Saraswati immediately refuted their contentions with searing logic. The meeting went on this way for 3 days. The Vaishnavas all offered strong arguments that no matter what family a Vaishnava appears in, he is perfectly qualified to worship the Shalagram Shila and recite the Vedas. On the final day, Siddhanta Saraswati was the concluding speaker. He spoke brilliantly, with great vigor and incredible rhetoric for 2 hours. When he finished, no one on the opposing party could say a word. There was simply no way to counter him. There was a huge uproar of acclaim of the brilliant Acharya. Thousands of people rushed forward to take the dust of his lotus feet. So this is the power, this is the impact of a great devotee of the Lord, of Siddhanta Saraswati. His literary accomplishments are, of course, probably one of his greatest contributions. He established many presses, and he printed thousands of books, pamphlets, newspapers, magazines, continually doing this. In 1928, he even established a daily newspaper called the Nadia Prakash. When challenged, how is it possible to publish a daily newspaper about God? Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur explained how this world was a small place, only 1/4 of the creation compared to the spiritual world, which comprises the other 3/4. He further replied, here in this world, there are thousands of newspapers and magazines reporting the stale, repetitious happenings of this limited space. So if we're reporting the news of the unlimited spiritual realm concerning the eternal, ever-fresh, supreme personality of Godhead, we could publish a newspaper at every second, what to speak of daily. Quite remarkable. He published the following magazine, Sajjana Toshini, established in 1881 by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and then he took it on afterwards. And then he renamed it The Harmonist and became an English monthly. And of course, Srila Prabhupada also wrote for The Harmonist, and I think he continued The Harmonist afterwards. So the Gaudiya, his first magazine, established in 1922, is the official weekly journal, the Gaudiya Mah. The Nadia Prakash, established in 1926, is an English Bengali magazine, but later daily newspaper. The Bhagavat, 1931, is a Hindi fortnightly. The Paramarthi, in 1932, an Orion magazine. And Kirtan, established in 1932, an Assamese monthly. So he was, again, this idea of preaching widely, printing in different languages, writing and printing in different languages of the people. He personally wrote over 108 essays and books, and aside from these, he published hundreds of articles in his magazines. Apart from his own writing, he published many other books, Bhagavad Gita, commentary by Śrīla Viṣṇu Chakravarti Thakur, Śrīla Bhaktivinoda Thakur's books, all books of the great Acharyas, the Chaitanya Bhagavat with his Gaudiya Bhashya, which is his commentary. That's the one we had, isn't it? The Chaitanya Bhagavat. I think Pundarik was involved in publishing that. That's why I was wondering. And that's Bhaktisiddhanta's original commentary in that. So, I mean, that's really nice. That's a wonderful book. The Chaitanya Bhagavat's like six volumes. And that's all by the grace of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. And many, many others. An English version of Chaitanya Bhagavat. 20,000 copies of Srila Narottam Das Thakur's Prema Bhakti Chandrika. And Chaitanya Mangala by Lodchan Das Thakur. Brahmasamhita, of course. And with Jiva Goswami's comments and his own Gaudiya Bhashya. Countless books by his father. And so, you know, on and on. And of course, this was Srila Prabhupada's inspiration. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta would tell him that. He still wants, if you ever have money, print books. And, you know, many things that preach in the English language. You know, constantly giving these instructions that we see how our Srila Prabhupada not only took the instructions, but he took the meaning, he took the mood, and just amplified it. This is what Bhaktisiddhanta, what his Gurudev wanted, and so he just did it, you know, like to the max. He did it just with great, you know, Prabhupada, I forget what our latest count on and how many books, Prabhupada's books, BBT has published, you know, it's in the 50 million range or something, or it's just 60 million, I think. So, this is the inspiration. And this is what happens when you are so intent on following the instructions of Guru. Incredible things can happen. Krishna can empower devotees to that degree. Okay. This is something, I thought I'd read something. This is from a group of writings called The Search for Truth. And this is where he talks about the boatman and the thorns. So not only did he preach high philosophy, but he also gave some practical stories and examples. There's a class of persons who are devoid of ordinary common sense, who say the function of the servant's world is the worst of all. We have therefore no intention of practicing any similar function in the next world. We intend to be masters, the object of worship. As the transcendental realm of unwholesomeness and is tortured by triple qualities, in this case with this world, if one is ignorant of the true meaning of Vaikuntha, one is liable to fall into this kind of poverty of judgment. He's apt to attribute and imagine the existence of unwholesomeness of the perverted reflected image even in the undisturbed substantive entity itself. In other words, people project what's in this material world onto the spiritual world. And therefore they think, you know, well, I don't want that. You know, in other words, if I'm a servant in this world, why do I want to go and become a servant and be served God? He says, they don't understand that there's no question of evil, there's only unmixed good. It's not our duty to carry from here anything that is productive of evil. The sun is a luminous, self-revealing entity. It is not necessary to carry any lamp to the sun. There's a popular tale to illustrate such misconceptions. A certain boatman was troubled by the idea that the operation of pulling at the cord for towing his boat was a miserable job involving great hardship, inasmuch as it required him to trudge painfully along most uneven ground over thorns and brambles which often stuck in the bare soles of his feet. Therefore, if he could manage to get rich somehow, he'd be in a position to tug at the cord by bestriding quilts and mattresses that he would take care to spread over either bank of the river. The boatman, the story was so foolish that he intended to carry all the miserable pursuits of his poverty-stricken state into the condition of affluence. See, that's the analogy there. The consideration that he could get rich, it might not be necessary. The consideration that he could get rich would not be necessary for him to tug the cord at all, would not penetrate his foolish pate. Anyway, so he goes on. I'm going to end here with, which is really appropriate, I didn't realize this, Srila Prabhupada's first meeting. You know, Krishna must have somehow wanted to read this because I didn't realize it was the 100-year anniversary. 1922, right. So this is the anniversary of Srila Prabhupada's first meeting with Bhaktisiddhanta. So here's the story of it. So when I met Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, it's a long story how I met him. One of my friends, he dragged me. I was at that time a nationalist and a manager in a big chemical factory. My age was about 24 years. So one of my friends, he asked me, there's a nice sadhu, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He's come to Calcutta. Let us go and see. I was reluctant. I thought there's so many sadhus, I'm not very much, and because I had a bad experience, not very good. So I said that this kind of sadhu, there are many. You'll be glad to know that even in my young age, early age, it was Krishna's grace. Even amongst my young friends, I was considered the leader. Not surprising. In my school days, my college days, my private friendship, somehow or other I became their leader. And one astrologer sometimes read my hand. He said in Hindi, your hand speaks that your order will be executed. Anyway, it was Krishna's grace. I would not go, but their point of view was that unless I certified that Sadhu Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he would not be accepted. In other words, they wanted his opinion and they would all follow him. Therefore, he dragged me. So I went to see Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur that day. And the first meeting, we offered obeisances, as is the practice. Immediately, he begins talking. You are all educated young men. Why don't you take up Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's cult and preach all over the English-speaking public? Why don't you take up this path? So I argued with him in some way. At that time, I was a nationalist. I told him, who will accept our message? A dependent nation, nobody will care. In this way, my own way in my younger days. But we belong to the Vaishnava family, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Nityananda, Radha Govinda, that is our worshipful deity. So I was very glad that Radha Krishna cult, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that this sadhu is trying to preach. It is very nice. At that time, we had some talks. Of course, I was defeated by his argument, my argument. And then it came out that we were offered prasad, very nice treatment to go from the Gaudiya Math. And when I came out on the street, this friend asked me, what is your opinion of this sadhu? And I said, here is the right person who has taken up Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's message, and now it will be distributed. I was at that time a fool, but I opined like this, and I accepted him as my spiritual master immediately. Not officially, but in my heart. That was 1922 today. So I would say, of all the events in the lifetime of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's wonderful lifetime, this day was one of the most important to us, from a very personal, selfish point of view, because by following his order, Srila Prabhupada, of course, took up his mission, came to the West, preached strongly, translated the Vaishnava literatures into English so we could understand them. He began temples all over, and we found Srila Prabhupada in this movement and found Krishna by the divine grace of Srila Prabhupada and the divine grace of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj Thakur. So Prabhupada in every way fulfilled the order and the desire of his spiritual master. And of course, we should follow in those footsteps and also try to follow their orders and please them. So thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. All glories to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj Thakur. Namo Vishmadaya Krishna Sambhadaya Srimati Bhakti. That's the time. Now, if anyone had a comment or wanted to add anything? Okay.